Charlie! Oh, yes!
It's on its way! It's there! The miracle on grass! McCluggage kicks him into a prelim!
He's got it! Brisbane have won! Bailey's kicked the goal! The dream comes true!
Here it is! The Brisbane Lions have done it! The Hawks, the Bombers, the Crows! They couldn't do it in the 80s or the 90s, but the Lions have gone back to back to back to become the greatest side of the modern era. They are football's invincibles.
It's Brisbane Lions Fancast with JB and Patrick as we head in to week one of the finals. Qualifying final between the Lions and Port at the Gabba, 7:30 Saturday night. The excitement and the nerves are both at an all-time high at the moment. And the last time we played Port Adelaide, it was all the way back in round one where we didn't show up. And I know that as a fan, I've been waiting all year to have another crack at them. I'm sure the players have as well. And I swear to God, if we go in with that level of complacency, I'm going to flip a f***ing table. Let's have a look at the game coming up and a few other little bits and pieces going on in the world of the AFL and the VFL and the AFLW, because there's plenty going on. We're also going to announce our winner of what we've decided is the JB Award for the home and away season, with the finals award being dubbed the Paddy. Mate, plenty going on, but how excited and or nervous are you for this Saturday night?
Feeling pretty good. I'm actually more excited at the prospect of you like taking some sort of little TV tray to the Gabba so you can flip it. But nah, I'm feeling pretty good. Like, it's there's not a great deal of kind of like AFL stuff that's up and about, so it's good to kind of have a little bit of a detox. But you know, heading into the big finals, yeah, everything's looking pretty good.
Before we look ahead, let's look back at the season that's just been and gone. A scratchy end to the season, but four wins on the trot.
Scratchy or perfection? What would you say?
Well, I guess that's the million-dollar question. Is it leaving a little bit left to be desired, or is it perfect preparation for finals? I guess the beauty is in the eye of the beholder there. But the season as a whole, it's definitely had some pretty low lights, but some pretty high highlights as well. Some pretty significant losses along the way. Hawthorn, the Melbourne one by a point, and the smacking by the Suns and Port Adelaide are the ones that stick out.
Yes, that is true. We've also played some very, very fine football along the way. So, you know, for example, if you look at pre-blackout Melbourne and the Richmond game and both Collingwood games, all quite handy, big game performances, I would say.
Yeah, you're right. I mean, the two games against Collingwood, that Richmond game was about as complete a performance. The game against Carlton as well down at Marvel, albeit a different Carlton at the time. But yeah, I think you're right. The best footy we played all year was in that loss to Melbourne. That sort of middle two and a half quarters was about as good as you'll see from the Lions.
Yeah, it was a bit of a shame to kind of like, you know, end the game as it was, you know, without closing it out. But I mean, if you look at it contextually within the season, that kind of that problem was more or less alleviated going forward. And it was interesting at the time that we just like hadn't. That was the first close game, or, you know, game with a margin of under 10 points that we'd been a part of.
Yeah, I mean, it was our first close game in a minute, but then what followed was a series of close games as well. Like we had Adelaide, Freo. They were both close ones that we managed to scrape over the line with.
Yeah, it's interesting if you look at kind of just a season chart, our losses sort of came in like little chunks, you know, 2 weeks apart, albeit with a bye in the middle of one of them, you know, Port Adelaide with the Bulldogs, then with the Melbourne sandwich, Adelaide Hawthorn with a bye sandwich, and then Melbourne Gold Coast with the Geelong sandwich. So, I don't know, little interesting patterns there. Season perfectly split into two lots of 9 and 3 or something like that. So, yeah, it's just kind of interesting to look at the picture.
Well, a lot of people are saying that our run into finals and our look at the finals, you know, with a couple of home finals, it's about as good a run as we'll get, and that this year is as well prepared as we'll ever be. So I guess that will unfold over the next 4 weeks or whatever.
Yeah, it's very much the case where, like, you know, I said last week, it's not very often that you finish in the top two on the ladder. And we did that probably slightly over performing expectations in 2019. And of course, given the the 2020 debacle. So, so, you know, like, it doesn't happen very often. We've played probably pretty good footy the last couple of years, and it just hasn't happened because we haven't performed at certain times. So, yeah, as good a chance as any, the potential to, well, for having two finals and a potential home prelim final, like, it's largely there. It's largely there.
First step is to take on Port Adelaide this week. And it looks like they will not be getting Dixon back at this stage, but in comes Scott Lysette, Trent McKenzie, and there was one other fella that was coming in as well. Todd Marshall comes back in as
Marshall.
Well. Yeah, so they're getting some players back, but not quite all. But it is the middle of the ground where it's going to really matter the most because, you know, I've still got nightmares of Jason Horne-Francis just busting out of the front of stoppages in round one and tearing us a new one.
Hopefully his weird, like, quads will explode out the back of his legs this time.
Yeah, it's always an option, but I'm not going to rely on it, I suppose.
I think it's just an early talking point was, like, what's going on with his legs. But now they got a very strong centre line between sort of, like, Dersma, Bergman, Wines, Rosie, obviously. That other guy, Butters, that won the Coaches Award.
Yeah.
He's pretty handy, too. Are they a little bit exposed in the ruck? Like, Lysette, I don't know, he's kind of been in and out of the team this season, has he not?
Yeah, he's had his injury troubles, and then they haven't really got an elite backup. So I think Ollie Lord's been chucked in there. They've tried Sam Hayes and another fellow whose name escapes me at the moment. But I guess with Lysette coming in, it takes a bit of the load off Finlayson, who having to ruck quite as much, who's put together a pretty decent season as well, especially in front of goal. So he's someone we've got to keep an eye on for. You'd imagine that, you know, Dixon out really, really helps because we had our hands full in round one. And for the first time in a long time, Charlie actually got the better of Harris Andrews in that one-on-one battle. So him out of the picture means that you'd imagine Jack Payne can take Marshall or even Frog, and then the other takes Finlayson, and then Harris can just sort of help out and intercept as he has been doing all year. So hopefully just that little bit of an ease of a burden can help. And then on the other side, it was Alira that did a lot of damage as well. So we need to not make the same mistakes that we did in round one and just kick it to Alira at will.
Yeah, I think we've sort of had a situation I've spoken about with interceptors obviously wanting to intercept the ball, but would you look at Link McCarthy doing a job similar to what he did with Tom Stewart, like rolling up, or would you look at Cam Rayner or something? Just I think it's just a level of like accountability and, you know, splitting the two kind of tools. And I think last week, Hipwood kept Wilkie a little bit out of the contest, although he didn't have a great game and was kind of beaten by Wilkie, kind of diffused Wilkie's kind of influence, I think. Just going back to their forward line, you know, a lot has been made of like Sam Peppers working around like forward half stoppage and things like that. What would you be doing with that?
I mean, the obvious answer is Stas, but, you know, his year has been pretty quiet for his standards. So he's certainly, I wouldn't say he's gone backwards, but he hasn't been the sort of as reliable. He's been exposed a few times this year, Stas, especially his last sort of 4 to 6 weeks. But, you know, like his work around forward 50 stoppages, he used to keep ranking to 3/5 of sweet FA. But he sort of got exposed a little bit at stoppages when we played Adelaide down at Adelaide Oval as well. So Powell Pepper's definitely got the ability to, and he's, you know, a big, strong boy for a shortish kind of guy. So I think that'll be a pretty, yeah, pretty tough matchup. And then you've got Willa Rioli and who else might be rolling through there? Not Fantasia, but, you know, they've got some crafty small forwards. Darcy Byrne-Jones has been going down there as well. So, yeah, it's a strange one.
I think it's more so just like the idea of, like, you know, we've all seen it at Power Pepper just beelining straight through the stoppage. Like, basically, like, similar to, like, prime John O'Brown almost, just, like, crashing it as if it was a contest. Like, do you just have someone stand in front of him and, like, take the heat physically? Because that's really the only way you can kind of stop it, in my opinion, is just have someone stand in front of him at stoppage, block the run. But man, that'd be a hard ask all night, particularly if they're getting repeat stoppages and things like that. You wouldn't be wanting too many forward 50 stoppages. So yeah, I think probably Stasevich in terms of the bigger body is the person for that. Otherwise, you're sort of like, well, do you put a Jack Payne on him at stoppage just to stop the run with your most physical player on theirs?
I mean, I'd think they'll start with Stas at least, and then sort of keep an eye on it for the first quarter and maybe the first half, and then make any adjustments if they need to, hopefully, before it's too late.
Yeah, I think definitely the lack of Charlie Dixon being there, just a lack of another big body, and also him taking over kind of the idea of the like Tom Hawkins or like Lynch style role in the ruck, just to kind of like two battering rams, I'd rather only one. Thank you. So,
yeah, I think a few times in round one as well, Dixon would have grabbed it out of the ruck and whacked it on his boot as well, and either scored or set up a goal as well. So having that out of the equation is certainly very helpful. But you know, Richmond pushed them for quite a bit in round 24, albeit without a few of their better players, Port Adelaide on the park. So they're gettable. They're definitely gettable. I mean, we know they're gettable, but you know, they're one of the teams that sort of worries me a little bit. It's just that midfield is just really firing on all cylinders at the moment.
Yeah, I suppose there's an element as well. They've had quite a lot of changes in their lineup. So, you know, we heard Faig talk about consistency in lineup and things like that, and that being a bit of a boon for us. We've had very little sort of change, particularly defensively, in the last sort of month at least. So maybe just that little bit of chemistry between the team might be a bit in and out with players, you know. Hopefully.
Well, it looks like we'll probably only be making the one change of Link coming in and probably JL out, you'd have to say.
Yeah, I think that's what we kind of foresaw last week, but I think that's probably our strongest team. And then it's just an element of like the million-dollar question of who's going to be the sub, whether it actually is an impact role or whether it's someone to roll through the midfield if things get a little bit dicey. So, you know, I'm sure they're doing their due diligence regarding Port's strengths. I think the Lions would be a difficult team to coach against in terms of like a lot of their strengths coming from one-on-one players. You know, ahead and behind the ball, it's like, what can you really do if you start to neglect certain players in contests? You know, we've seen, and it gets said, you know, this is not new information, but it gets said all the time. It's like, you look at the forward six or seven from the Lions, and like any one of them can break a game, you know, between like Link, Charlie, Bailey, Rayner, Hipwood and Danaher. Like any one of them can kick a handful. Behind the ball, we've got some really good one-on-one defenders. And then also the ability to zone off. So I think, you know, if I was Port, I'd be looking at just trying to like plan my own game around that kind of center clearance element. And then their runoff halfback with Houston and stuff like that. So for me, it's a matter of just maintaining a little bit of like parity in center clearance and then trying to win that post clearance and like just work the turnover game as we've done more or less the whole season. So.
I mean, that's going to have to be it. And we saw, I mean, I touched on before, round one, Alirelia sort of had his way with us. But that game against Melbourne down at the MCG, when we were playing our best footy, there was a bit of switch and only take the options when they're there and avoid May and Lever. That's when we were playing our best footy. Didn't look the prettiest when it was happening. But then once we saw the results, and you know, we saw Fletcher and Ashcroft kicked those amazing goals from that sort of style of play. And then again, as you touched on, we avoided Tom Stewart at all costs as well. So we sort of, you know, while the intercept defender was a big chink in our armor, we managed to negate that in those two games specifically fairly well. So if we can take those learnings into this game against Port, then it's going to go a big way.
Well, yeah, that kind of ethos is really, it sort of began with the first St Kilda game at Marvel Stadium, just with the way of like it being kind of the first Frost Line game, but just like, yeah, the ability to pick and to not let them switch and to just sort of be very defensively tight and try not to hit those interceptors. It was a good kind of blueprint for the back half of the season, I think. So, you know, interceptors are always going to take intercept marks. They're just going to do it. It's their role, particularly Aaliyah. But I think we saw, was it Noah Bolter go to him in the Richmond game?
Yep.
And it did make him a bit more accountable and he had a bit of body put on him. So I'm not saying we should roll Jack Payne in the forward line by any metric. But, you know, maybe that level of, well, like, I think probably Cam Rayner can go to him and make things difficult to him because he's got great vertical leap,
yep,
really good contest, and he can put strong body on. So, you know, Cam Rayner's not a player that I feel similar to Pal Pepper you'd want to spend all day hitting hips with, so.
I think Cameron is perfect for that role as well. And I think we saw it in that 2020 qualifying against Richmond where we finally sort of broke the hoodoo against them because we were getting done by Voston and Dylan Grimes who were constantly intercept marking. So I think we always had someone like a Link or a Cameron on one of them, no matter how far up the ground the ball was, to keep those guys accountable. So he's played that role before and maybe he can do it again, albeit against a sort of bigger opponent. But we know that Cam's got the skills to do that sort of thing.
It's a height versus girth battle, I think.
Not often we get to say the word girth on the podcast, so...
He's a girthy boy, Cam Rayner, all I'll say.
He is. He certainly is.
If you've got a mate that loves the Lions, tell them to get the podcast into their ear holes.
I think it's, like, I don't know, not to toot my own horn, but I think, you know, heading behind the ball, I think we'll have the advantage. I said this last week, and then in the middle, it's sort of, we've just got to hold on and try and not let their midfielders that run and make the make overs in the next contest. Like, we need to make sure that the midfield is working hard, because if they work hard, they're more or less level in terms of center clearance and not allowing the outnumber, then they'll get a week off to rest their lovely bones. So,
yeah, what do you think? Obviously, we've seen throughout the season that the bye came at the detriment to basically everyone. A bit of a different story now with every team having the week off, but do you like the idea of playing two games of footy in a month, or would you prefer a bit of continuity?
No, I wouldn't. I'm more of a fan of like the bye between preliminary and grand final.
Yeah.
Just in terms of like, if someone gets like a minor concussion or something, you don't want them missing a grand final. I know we have to be careful with concussions, particularly given the retirement in the week, but like, you know, we saw Jared Berry go out in a elimination final against the Bulldogs with a very innocuous concussion. And it's like, if you miss a grand final for that, it's like, it'd suck.
Yeah.
Particularly if you were like virtually showing no symptoms and it was just a bit of a bump on the head. To miss a grand final would be pretty brutal. You know, we've talked in other episodes of how we've got Ross Lyon to thank for this bye before the finals, but I think it negates the advantage of finishing higher up and finishing in the top four, because, you know, yeah, I don't think you'd want to be playing one game in 3 weeks or 4 weeks or two games in a month or whatever. So, yeah, I think the earning that week off is probably more important, but it's not the way it is at the moment. So we've just kind of got to... I'm not saying we should lose so that we can keep our momentum up, because that's insane. But like, I don't think the system's particularly well thought out. You know, plus you have a week between the prelims and the grand final. Like, you have the Brownlow on, make that a Saturday night event.
Yeah.
That way I feel like if you've got interstate clubs in the grand final, you're not like doing the old like Brisbane Convention Centre.
Yeah.
With like the team there and having like weird cut to like live camera and that sort of garbage. So I feel like it'd be a better event. And also it would like stop any of that kind of like 2004 grand final garbage, you know, which Brownie did make an interesting point on the couch a couple of weeks ago or a week ago, or whatever, where Port Adelaide, if they lose, it's, you know, I have no sympathy for them after 04, but like they've got a bit of a brutal travel back to then play the winner of, is it St Kilda or Giants?
Yeah. You'd have, I mean, you'd think that'd probably be GWS.
Yeah. But the idea of them playing, having played later, not being able to get back to Adelaide and stuff like that. Like, realistically, the Lions Port Adelaide should be Friday night. It should be, because they should get the extra day's rest. But not to be. Here we are. It just seems, it's just a bit of an oversight. Like, and I feel like fixturing like this shouldn't really happen. I've heard a lot of people talk about Collingwood and Melbourne being like, oh, well, there's no advantage for Collingwood. It's like, you're a Victorian team. You get an advantage, like, the majority of the season. Like, shut the up. Like, I do agree that they should get more seat allocation.
Yeah.
Like, they should get the vast majority of seat allocation. But I don't think that, like, oh, they finished top of the table, so there's no advantage. It's like, you're playing at the MCG, you're playing at your home. You don't have to travel. You probably haven't traveled in about 8 weeks anyway, a la Richmond 2019, where they played at the MCG for like 9 games straight. It's like, that's your advantage.
Yeah.
Just because you don't get as much of a perceived advantage in finals in the crunch. It's because you've only got two stadiums in your city. Like, that's not anyone else's fault, but, you know, so be it. Don't really care. Sucked in. If they feel like they don't have an advantage and they don't, then that makes me happy. That's all I got to say about that. I think that St Kilda should be playing at Marvel.
Yeah, I think so too, but you can't imagine they're going to get that much more at the MCG.
No, I don't even think it would fill out Marvel.
I'm sure it'll fill out Marvel, but I don't know that they're going to get any much more than 50,000 at the MCG. But who knows? Maybe.
Yeah. It's sort of a bit of a moot point, really. I just feel like if it's your home ground, that's what you're used to. Yeah. And it's the Giants, not a great supporter base. Like, they're not setting a great precedent for going forward. I know they're trying to maximize seats or whatever, but, like, you know, you'd rather a pumped up roof on kind of, you know,
yeah, for sure.
Leave the Jew come in for Ross Lyon to complain about, like, that kind of. There's so many, like, you know, stories to be told there. So Yeah, the fixturing's a little bit odd. Like, I would have made those two changes, whether it's either swapping the Lions and the St Kilda game, but I guess St Kilda GWS isn't particularly prime time in their opinion. But and then, yeah, just the idea of, like, Collingwood playing on a Thursday and then potentially, where would the preliminary final be? They'd be, what, Friday and Saturday or?
Yeah.
Saturday day, Saturday night?
No, it'd be Friday night, Saturday night.
So they're looking at potentially the winner of that game having a 15-day break.
Yeah, potentially.
That's a long time. Yep. A lot of bone healing to happen, isn't it?
Yep.
Yeah. Oh, dear. Well, you know, win the game. I don't know. What do you think in terms of, like, not necessarily predictions, but that, you know, that Collingwood-Melbourne game, everyone and their cat has been saying, like, that's where the premiers are going to come from, the winner of that game. What do you reckon?
Probably. I think Melbourne will win that game, and I think they'll probably win the flag. I mean, that's my honest opinion. I think Melbourne's my pick. They've been playing the best footy leading into finals. I think they've obviously got a bit of an issue with their ball movement and their forward line. But, you know, Bailey Fritsch comes back, kicks 5. You know, they've got Tom McDonald potentially to come back in, or Brody Grundy. I don't know that they'll be picking Brody Grundy again, especially in a final. But they've got options. Yeah. But, yeah, I think they're my pick. Their back line's good. Their midfield's good.
I've got a sneaky feeling that I think it's going to be a Port Brisbane grand final.
Sure.
Like, I just have a sneaky feeling that, you know, the Lions are going to beat Port, and then Port will go back to Adelaide Oval, deal with St Kilda or GWS, and then go on a bit of a run. I just have a weird sneaky feeling that Melbourne or Collingwood winning the, you know, their qualifying final, the amount of stagnation with that, and Port Adelaide just, you know, playing some of those other, you know, other ins back into kind of form is going to do them well. So I have an odd feeling that, although everyone's been saying it'll be like a Collingwood Melbourne grand final, I think it's going to be a Lions Port Adelaide grand final.
Sure.
And I think we're going to win.
I mean, I'd love that. 19 years for some sweet Rwenge. Don't count the Giants out, though.
The most bitter people on earth about that. Yeah, the Giants are playing pretty good footy. But I still just tend not to factor in those kind of lower four of the eight teams. Just, you know, call it my own cynicism, or I guess, like, ignoring the hooded shadowy figures in the dark. But
I think one of them will make a prelim. I think it'll be...
You do?
Yeah, I think Carlton or GWS will make a prelim.
Yeah, maybe. I don't know. I'm not convinced by Carlton, but I guess we'll find out. The game is surprisingly, even though it's been said as being built for finals, is literally the antithesis of a finals style of game. So I don't really understand that, Lee Montagne.
Yeah, I don't know. I don't understand much of what Lee Montagne says.
Did you remember, like, a few weeks ago when they were talking about Melbourne being in a bit of strife, and they sort of said, you know, they were talking about Collingwood, but referencing Melbourne from last year, and he said, like, oh, you know, Melbourne weren't playing their greatest football. They still made a prelim, though. It's like, no, they didn't. They got beaten by us.
Yeah, I do remember that.
And they kept replaying it, like, again and again and again and again and again. All the angles of Lee Montagne, just, like, revisionist history that was completely untrue. It's like, man, what? Why? Wouldn't you want to tell everyone that we got dusted hard in a prelim in the MCG? Or is it going to be one of those things where, like, if this is true, that cannot be true. So did that not actually happen?
Don't go into that.
Butterfly effect garbage.
Get in touch anytime. Shoot us an email at blfancast@gmail.com or join the Discord.
Do we have any questions?
Unsolicited. Got an email from Jordan Smith, who was one of our winners for the double pass to the Saints game.
You say, like, seats put me right in the firing line of the sun?
No.
I got horrible sunburn, and I will accost you unsolicitedly at the pub.
With the knife. That's a good thing about the 4:30 games, is it times out, so just as the ball gets bounced, that the sun just disappears behind the grandstand. He did say, thanks for the tickets. The game was pretty uneventful, correct? He's got a question about our inaccuracy in front of goals. So he's listed a few examples of where we've been pretty poor in front of the goals. So against North, 22-20. Essendon, 12-15, 10-18 against Adelaide, 13-19 against Sydney, 16-20 against West Coast.
There's far too many examples.
There was only two more.
Smith.
He says only two of them were losses. But do you think our inability to bury teams like a ruthless Melbourne or Collingwood on the day will hurt us come finals time? Or is the comp just so close now that given the professionalism of the sport, you just take a win when you can get it despite what the scoreboard says? Because that's what we've managed to do so far this year. Fags did say after the game that we take the win and go into the finals in second place. Maybe it's a bit harsh, or maybe the image of Joe Danaher just missing a goal from 10 metres out is just sticking in our minds.
Yeah, I mean, well, I'd argue that, like, Melbourne and Collingwood haven't necessarily, like, pumped teams super heavily this year. I know there's obviously the recency bias of the Essendon game, but aside from that, like, they beat Gold Coast pretty handily, Collingwood. But, you know, they're the king of the close game, and Melbourne have had, you know, in their last 7-8 rounds of footy, they've only, their highest win has been a 32-point win, which they've had against Richmond and North Melbourne. So, you know, Melbourne, although they beat North Melbourne by 90 points, I don't think North Melbourne games really count this year. We had our biggest win against Richmond at 81 points, and that was when Richmond were in pretty decent form. So, yeah, I mean, like, accuracy is a thing and a problem and a blight to almost everybody. Just don't talk about it, basically.
Sure.
It's
not a problem if you can't see it.
Basically, it's like, you know, yes, it's been an issue, but I think if you look at the two preliminary finals that we've not performed very well in, I don't think it was an issue in those games.
No,
at all.
We had bigger issues.
Was it an issue in the GWS or the Bulldogs game? Maybe, but also probably not. Definitely an issue in that Richmond game in 2019, but, you know, let's not talk about that. So really, if you look at all of our finals performances, there was only really one that it kind of cost us quite heavily. So yes, we don't want to see the inaccuracy kind of happen, but I don't think there's any element of, like, clinicalness, for lack of better words, that Collingwood or Melbourne have. Like, they've both had goal kicking issues and accuracy issues. Like, what was that Melbourne game where they, like, they just couldn't kick at all?
That game against GWS in Alice Springs or whatever it was. Yeah,
I mean, I suppose that's a bit of a different kettle of fish, but yeah, like, also probably the Geelong game before that one. So I don't know, like, accuracy is kind of relative, and I don't think, like, you know, you wouldn't imagine that, like, Danaher's not practicing his goal kicking. Like, everyone would be doing that, surely.
Yeah.
It's just a thing. It just happens sometimes. So
yeah, I mean, I think it's definitely been an issue that's been raised about us in the past, but not so much this year. I don't think it's been a huge blight on our game so far. And as Jordan's pointed out, we've walked away with a win more often than not. So yeah, you just take that. There's only one grand final I can think of that it really was an issue, and that was 2008, where Geelong just could not kick a goal to save themselves, and Hawthorn managed to capitalize on that and walk away with a flag.
I thought you were going to go with North Melbourne versus Adelaide in 1997.
No, I'm not going back that far, but very possible.
I was, because, well, I mean, like, I don't know. I, funnily enough, I watched the 2008 grand final, like, in the last 6 months.
Yeah.
Just because I was curious to see, like, Stewie Jew's, like, three moments of fame.
It's pretty good.
Pretty good. A lot of those behinds were rushed. Yep. So the score actually blows out very differently to how it kind of appears. So, yeah, a bit of an odd one, but yeah, I agree. Like, very minimally is the accuracy kind of actually that much of an issue. So in a grand final, that is more the issue of, like, small guy tackling Max Gorn and then the team getting, like, a 700 goal run on. So
yeah.
Dane Zorko, don't do that. Don't do what Daniel did. I can't make this clearer.
Yes.
Can't make it any clearer than that.
Although, no, AFL throughout the week, there were still bits and pieces going on, especially when it comes to the Lions. Marcus Adams, I guess, did what we all knew was coming, and that was officially announce his retirement. A very touching video going out on the club website from him and Fags, but I think it's something we all saw coming, surely.
Yeah, it was pretty heartbreaking, that video. Like, more so than a lot of them that I've seen, because you sort of get these journeyman or, you know, long-term players that sort of, you know, are obviously emotional with, like, a massive change in lifestyle and being, like, you know, they're walking away from footy, having played sort of 250 games. This one was a bit different because it sort of seems like someone who genuinely didn't want to be doing that. You know, we have seen in the past, there has been elements of, like, quite emotional retirements with people regarding concussion, but this one, I don't know, I haven't seen Fagan that emotional since pre-Hawthorn allegations. It was sort of the first time I really seen him actually show a level of emotion.
Yeah, it was quite strange, but quite nice.
It was, but he also managed to make it kind of funny and somewhat pointed in a way of, you know, it's supposed to be you that's sad, not me. But I don't know. Like, I think Fagan and Marcus Adams, they must have had an element of like quite a special connection, because it was quite early on where it was basically a foregone conclusion where Fagan's like, if Adams is fit, he's playing.
Yeah.
Like, it was a non-negotiable. And I think he indicated that pretty well in terms of like him as a person. I think Adams has done a really good job within the club in terms of sort of driving standards, whether that's like looking after yourself or basically what's physically possible on a human body. Just for some of the younger players in terms of conditioning and looking after themselves. So like he was unlucky. He had a really unlucky career with injury and then obviously with the things that have come. But like the first half of last year, he was like absolutely in All-Australian form. No one mentioned it, but he was so good.
Yeah.
In the first half of last year.
I remember the game he lined up on Tom Hawkins and held him goalless. And I thought to myself, oh my God, you know, for the first time in however long, not only is Tom Hawkins not kicking a bag on us, he's not kicking a goal.
Well, that was the Link McCarthy one, right?
Yeah, I think so, yeah.
Now, I might be slightly wrong, but I'm quite sure I'm right that Hawkins didn't take a mark in that game, and it's the only game he's ever not taken a mark in.
Yeah, probably.
I'm fairly sure that that's the case, because it was a big deal at the time. And, you know, Hawkins lined up on Harris Andrews a bit like, you know, Alistair Lynch on Dustin Fletcher. Like, you know, Fletcher was the best fullback, and it never really worked on Lynch because he could just bully him with his strength. And that's what Hawkins used to do to Harris all the time. And then you throw in like, oh, here's like a 110-kilo monster. Good luck.
Yeah.
And I really think that his game style has been a prototype for Jack Payne, and Jack Payne will have a lot to thank Marcus Adams for. And us as a club will have a lot to thank Marcus Adams for going forward regarding Jack Payne.
I think so too. It's amazing we've been able to cover these key position posts, like, you know, Justin Clark and now Marcus Adams. Throw it. I mean, we've had others retire along the way. I don't think anyone held out massive hopes for Jack Frost, but another key defender we lost to concussion. But, you know, we've managed to cover these with not just decent, but like very, very good key position defenders.
Well, if you were in a position a couple of years ago where you're like, okay, maybe 2020, and you said, okay, your defensive talls, you got Harris, Darcy Gardner and Marcus Adams running around. It's like, if you're going to lose Marcus Adams and Darcy Gardner, people would have thought we'd been on all sorts of strife.
Yeah.
Cue the renaissance of Leicester and Jack Payne, who, you know, their potential was there, but he hadn't quite been realised at the time, and you know, like a different sort of frog in water, I guess.
Now, it's probably a bit early, but do you reckon other than maybe Daniel Rich and any other retirements perhaps?
It's hard to speculate. I think if we win the flag, Zorko will go.
Yeah.
I think he'll do a Crawford. I don't know whether he'll play on if he doesn't. I can see Darcy Gardner retiring.
Yeah.
But yeah, I don't really know. I suppose it doesn't really, speculation is hard, you know, it's not really overly worthwhile, but yeah, unless they want to put up in the twos, like the team's moving quickly.
Yeah.
And they've got to, you know, the team's got to move quickly and they've got to continue to improve because other teams are improving. You can't really stand still. So, yeah, I guess I'm just going to be a bit more on the wait and see.
Yeah, you're probably right.
How about yourself? Any thoughts?
Yeah, no, those are probably the most obvious ones. I don't know about any more retirements, but I think there'll definitely be some movement. And maybe Darcy Gardner might be inclined to look elsewhere, or someone might throw him a contract offer and he might take that up. But, yeah, I don't see too much else in terms of retirements there. We haven't got a huge amount of plus 30s on the list, especially in the first
eight. No, which is, it's interesting because someone on an analysis show said that next season we'll have 10 over 30 players. And it's like, that is selective viewing at its absolute finest because 5 to 7 of them are not regular players. So
yeah.
It was mind boggling. I think David King brought that up. I was just like, what are you talking about, mate? Like, we've literally got a young list. Like, that's what our list is. It's like, oh yeah, Danaher's going to be 30, but like, though, so, I don't know. Not worth thinking about that kind of chaff commentary. I don't think there's a person that I simultaneously disagree with, but then sometimes really agree with than David King. He is an absolute anomaly.
Yeah, I don't know. That's
grating shit.
Yes. He just like picks random numbers and stats out to suit whatever it is that he thinks.
So, speaking of defenders, Big H Andrews, bit unlucky. Unlucky, I'd say.
Yeah.
Not to be wearing that purpley blazer.
He's the only one that I thought was a bit stiff from the Lions. I thought Charlie was a lock, and I thought Harris was most likely. Otherwise, Neil and Danaher, they would have been lucky to make the bench. They had fantastic years, obviously, but I don't see them shoving anyone else out for those positions. So, yeah, Harris a little bit stiff. I thought he had a better year than Wilkie, or potentially more at times. I don't think anyone had a really consistent great year of those three, but I thought Harris was probably the most consistent.
He definitely played the most. He does not come off the field virtually ever, except for, like, you know, 0.1%. So lots of playing. Yeah, it's just interesting that he kind of fell a bit out of vogue in the second half of the year when we started sort of moving the ball and having a bit more pressure on the ball, having fewer kind of inside 50 entries and stuff like that. But I don't know. I kind of made a bit of a bold statement regarding Tom Stewart, where I don't think his year this year has been as good as other ones, but maybe that's not a metric to judge who should be an All-Australian or not. But to see, like, Neil crop up at, like, fifth in the coaches' votes and stuff like that is pretty wild, considering similarly, I don't think he's had nowhere near as good a year as last year or, you know, 2020 or 2019 even. So, like, you know, a lot of people saying, like, Dustin Martin should have probably been in there, but on his lofty standards, he wasn't. So it's like, it's an allowance made for Tom Stewart, but not for the others. It seems a bit odd, but I mean, I would have had him in there ahead of Wilkie. You could even have Wilkie instead of Tom Stewart. Curious to know the percentage of minutes that Nick Dacos actually played in the centres as an on-baller, because for the first half of the season, he was the highest-rated general defender.
Yeah.
And there he is, on ball. It's like, okay. Because him and Jack Sinclair basically play the same position. Now you're cramming extra running halfback mids in, as a la you do in the forward line with midfielders in the forward line. I think Mitch Robinson and McCluggage should be rolling in their graves at the selection of wingers for the first time.
Yeah.
They pioneered that.
I was going to say, at least they finally selected wingers, and they finally selected some half forward midfielders that actually played a good chunk forward.
Yeah.
So at least they got those two things right. So actually good to see Josh Dacos and Goulden get those wing spots, because I thought they were really great wingmen throughout the year.
Absolutely, but I'm still salty McCluggage hasn't got a blazer when he was the highest rated winger for about three seasons.
Yeah.
So, you know, be in my bonnet, as it were. You know, the team's good, and there were, you know, there's a lot of first-time people in there, which is good, always good. Yeah, it's interesting and good to see, like, quite a lot of new faces. Toby Green as captain was fun. Larky got in there, and I think Larky kind of got in there at the expense of any kind of, like, second ruck or, you know, the Joe Danaher role. But I think he deserved that. Quite good. Quite good team.
Everyone's always going to have opinions on the All-Australian team, but I thought it's probably one of the better ones we've had in a minute. Yeah, there's obviously a few changes that you could make, but all in all, I thought it was fairly well done.
It's interesting to look at, like, the players in an All-Australian and, like, how many of them have kind of got a hold of you in a home and away season or been, like, very effective against you. Like, you know, it's obviously Bontempelli was, like, best on ground in the game that we played them. Then we've got the kind of Port Adelaide trio, and Jack Sinclair's been pretty good in the two games, but albeit not in the winning team, and Sicily was instrumental in the game. So it's, you know, if they're performing well against your team that are sitting in the top two, they're probably having pretty good seasons. So Caleb Sarong as well, and Dawson. So, yeah, good to be in there.
Make sure you follow us on socials. Just search for BL Fancast.
The other things that have obviously happened throughout the week is the women's season started. So I just want to ask you a question. I'll touch on the game very briefly. I know you didn't catch it, but Lions lost to Richmond at Brighton Homes Arena. Richmond were just much better throughout the day. Our list, once again, completely pillaged. So Emily Bates, Jessie Wardlaw and Greta Bodie all taken off in the off-season. So the equivalent is if someone came along and pinched Joe Danaher, Charlie Cameron and Lachie Neal, and you couldn't do anything about it in the name of equalisation. So it's going to be hard to compete at the same level when that happens to your list. But question for you with the AFLW. Like, I know they're trying to grow the game and I want them to grow the game. I'm not exactly a diehard supporter of AFLW, but I will watch it and cheer on the girls, and I'm fairly familiar with all of the lists. But do you think it deserves its own spot to shine rather than like putting round one in the bye week before finals, it's like everyone's mind is still on the AFL, the men's season and the upcoming finals, that it's sort of like, well, you're giving us this to distract us, or I just think it deserves its own designated spot.
Yeah, I can see what they're trying to do, but I just don't think it works. I assume they're looking at it going, okay, now 10 of the teams are not going to be involved in finals. So their supporter base or fan base or whatever are going to go on to the AFLW. But it's like, I just don't think that's realistic. I mean, I struggle with any sport watching it not at the highest level. You know, I can barely watch the A-League in the soccer because I'm like, you know, a glutton for watching the Premier League because it's a high standard. I would have difficulty watching the French League or the Italian League. I don't watch a lot of general sport. I watch a lot of AFL, a lot of multiple AFL games a weekend and stuff like that. But generally with other sports, I'll watch a single game. I'll watch my team play or whatever. You know, maybe they need to do it the week after the grand final or whatever. Like, they're fitting in a spot. It's not going to work concurrently with the men's competition, but I don't know. It's a difficult one. This is a garbage answer, isn't it?
It's just something that baffles me. I don't... Like, obviously, there was a decision made. I'm not sure why, but it's like, you know, me who tries to get involved in the AFL as much as I possibly can, and I do watch it, it's hard to get that amped up about it when I'm so preoccupied by, you know, my team playing a qualifying final against Port Adelaide, and I'm sure a lot of other supporters are the same. So it doesn't, like, I can't give it the attention that it probably deserves.
But I feel like even if the team wasn't playing in that qualifying final, there'd be more of an inclination to be paying attention to the other football.
Yeah.
At least for me. And, like, I don't know, I feel like the women's game is really caught... They're caught in a bit of an identity crisis, I feel, because you hear a lot about them wanting, you know, equal pay and parity and things like that. But then also, like, they really like the idea that it's got more of like a local footy feel. So it's like, you can't really have both. I don't think you can have both. But.
Yeah, I think they're probably a long way off sorting any of that out. I know there's been some sort of parity with pay for finals or grand finals or something like that. I don't know all the ins and outs, so I don't want to speak too much about stuff I don't really know that much about. But some players that stood out, I'm really excited for what Belle Dawes can do in the middle. She had a great season last year, and now she's going to get more time in the midfield. Same with Jade Ellinger, and I mean the usual suspects, Ali Anderson, Kathy Svark had good games. Dax Davison put through a couple of goals, but Mom Conti just sort of tore us apart. So there's your AFLW. It always takes like a couple of weeks to find out who the best teams are and whether this equalization is really going to work. So I will keep a loose eye on it, but it will be loose for the moment until the AFL wraps up, I must admit. The other thing is the VFL, our VFL team, took on the Suns and got dusted by 43 points. So we will be taking on Williamstown in an elimination final next week. Last time we played Williamstown, we got done by a goal. I think it was one of those come-behind wins. But just watching this game against the Suns, I didn't realise just how stacked Gold Coast are for key forwards. So obviously in the seniors, they've got Casbolt, King, and I guess Lukosius running around. They're about to get Jed Walter, who's arguably the best key forward in the draft. But then the twos on the weekend, they had Chris Burgess, Sam Day, and Marbior Chol all in the forward line. And our back line just had no answers. Because we got Darcy Gardner as our most experienced key defender down there, like supported by, you know,
by
Tom Fulton.
Marcus and, Adams or something.
Yeah, and Wiley Buzzer and stuff like that. So we just had no answer. And I think Sam Day kicked four, Burgess kicked four, Sexton kicked three, and Chol just consistently brought to ground, had three shots on goal as well.
What you're saying is they had an AFL standard forward line and we had a VFL standard back line.
Yeah. I mean, they had plenty of AFL listed players. Like Jai Farrar was in there, Charlie Constable, Cheetahs, who's played a few games, Alex Davies. But I mean, we had a fair amount of AFL listed players as well. JL, Harry Sharp, Jackson Pryor, Tunstall, Matheson had one of his quieter games. Loman was all right. Darcy Fort. So both were stacked for AFL level players, but it was just the difference in that forward line versus our back line was immense. And it's probably why they ended on top of the ladder.
Yeah, well, I guess they're a bit of a scary prospect going forward, Gold Coast, you know, with what they're looking to be getting in the draft this year. We'll have to wait and see, but it could be a bit of a few spicy affairs going forward, eh?
Yeah, I'd say so, which is obviously going to be good for the game. And, you know, I look forward to seeing the Suns do well, you know, and I'm sure a lot of that will be attributed to Damien Hardwick, but as you said, 80% of the list is already there, so I'll be watching that as well over the coming years.
Be hard not to, really. It'll be jammed down everyone's throat with Freddy Krueger and his nightmare team from Gold Coast.
Like the show? Make sure to follow and subscribe on your favourite podcast platforms.
All right. We have given out votes each and every week throughout the podcast for the home and away season. I've got our top five here for the JB Award, which is the award for the best player through the home and away season, and then the Paddy will get the finals award.
Oh, goodness me. How did that get past quality control? I don't know.
A very short meeting with little discussion is the answer to that.
I don't think you really had much say in the matter, did you?
No. So coming at number five, Joe Danaher, 13 votes. Equal fourth, Charlie Cameron and Hugh McCluggage with a bullet. He polled a lot of votes in the back half of the year, finishing on 16.
Well, he looked like he was half asleep for the first six rounds.
Yeah, I think he polled two votes in the first half, and then he polled 14 in the back half.
Oh, good boy.
Same with Jared Berry, who polled one vote in the first half and 11 in the second half. So he finished just outside the top five with 12 votes. Coming in third, our boy Will Ashcroft with 19.
Obviously stopped with the bullet.
Yeah. Yes. Dunks at number two with 20 votes. And it's going to be as no surprise that Lachie Neale is our player of the home and away season with 36 votes. And probably why he'll poll like fairly well on Brownlow night, because his good games were really good. Like he was very obviously best on in the games that he played well.
There were also definitely games that I didn't give him votes on just because it was boring.
Yep.
So it's an odd one, the old Brownlow medal is an odd one, but I guess it, you know, could see Neil in the top five easily, I suppose.
100%. Link polled a few votes, Harris and Oscar sort of polled as well, sort of your top 10 there, but Lachie Neale, would you believe it?
We'll get a bunch of stick from my brother for no defenders being in the top five and it being all midfielders, so... Oh, except for Danaher, but you know.
Oh, Danaher and Charlie, but yeah.
Yeah, just sort of feels like defenders not getting the love, so whether we do votes next year or not, or, you know, whether we change it and do a vote for each line... Yeah, that could be a good idea.
Oh, yeah.
Send in your suggestions.
Please do. Always get in touch. BLFancast on any of the socials or BLFancast@gmail.com, just like Jordan did throughout the week. So that's your winners.
Well done, Lachie. Well done, Lachie. I'll give you a bit of a slamming the gavel down. It's supposed to be applause, but I nearly broke a coffee cup, so...
Well, there you go. That's it. We got four big finals on this week. Do you want to do some tips?
Tips?
Yeah.
What for?
For the four games.
Tips for living? Tips for living?
No, just tips for the four games. So, Melbourne Collingwood, who you reckon is going to walk away with the win there?
Melbourne?
Yeah, I'm with Melbourne too. Carlton Sydney?
Sydney.
Giving Carlton no chance. Yep. Has that got anything to do with your just general dislike of Carlton?
There's a bit of spite.
Okay. Fair enough. Port Brisbane we won't touch on, and GWS and St Kilda.
GWS.
Yeah, I'm with you on that one as well. So I think we agree, except for Carlton. I think Carlton will beat Sydney.
Yeah, Sydney are coming with a bullet at this point in time, so who knows?
They're playing good footy. Yeah, I mean, I wouldn't be surprised, but you know, I'm going to back in Vossi on this one.
I guess, like, they got good players, but I don't know. I think their balance is a bit skewed and too stoppage heavy for finals, in my opinion, but I guess we'll see. It doesn't. I don't really care either way.
We're certainly
on the other side of the draw. So what a bunch of peasants.
Sure. Well, there you go. Our big game, 7:30 Saturday night at the Gabba. I'm sure a lot of people listening will have their tickets. I know I got mine. 10 o'clock. Join the queue in Ticketmaster. Secured.
Yeah. Well, I guess all fun and games. Hopefully, you have the know-how on how to do that grand final day. Because hell if I know.
Yeah. Not an issue we've had to worry about previously, so I'll be doing my darndest, but that's still a few weeks away. So that's it. Home and away season is done and dusted, and now the real stuff begins, as they say.
But I do want to leave you on one thing. You little beauty!